Welcome to the RCAF USA Roundup. I'm Shad Sullivan.
And I'm Jaden Moreland, and we're here to talk all things cattle, sheep, and American exceptionalism. We stand for liberty and freedom.
And we are having real and honest conversations about issues that affect your family, your ranch, your community, and most of all, your legacy. So let's jump right in.
It wasn't that long ago that Dutch farmers made international headlines as they drove their tractors protesting their country adopting policies that directly attacked agriculture in the name of climate change. And today, a similar picture is being painted across Europe as over 20 countries protest for many of the very same reasons. Dutch farmers advocate and internationally renowned political commentator Eva Vlaardingerbroek has been at many of these protests, and today she joins us to discuss the dangers of globalism and why farmers are the target. This episode is sponsored by Grossenberg Implement. Grossenberg is a full-service John Deere dealership, including parts, sales, and service, with locations in South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. Founded in 1937 by Charles Jacob Grossenberg and his wife Blanche, CJ's interest in cutting-edge farm technology had him researching the opportunity to bring John Deere tractors to the Tripp County area, as the need for two-cylinder tractors was on the rise during World War II. And so began Grossenberg Implements. Today, Charles and Blanche's grandson Barry and their great-grandson Charlie carry forward that tradition of service. Visit Grossenberg.com for more information. Thank you, Grossenberg, for being a 2023 convention sponsor, and thank you for your support of RCAF USA. Welcome to this episode of the RCAF USA Roundup. We have with us today Eva Vlaardingerbroek. That's right. Kind of.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eva was our keynote speaker at our convention last August, and we are so excited to sit down with her and visit today. So Eva, tell our listeners who aren't as familiar with you, just kind of a quick introduction and just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me again. I'm super excited. I'm Eva Vlaardingerbroek, or Vlaardingerbroek, as you said in American English, which is totally fine. You said it perfectly. It's a difficult last name, I know. I'm a Dutch political commentator and activist, and I've been very involved in the Dutch farmers' protests over the past few years. So for your viewers who don't know, our farming sector, our agricultural sector in the Netherlands has been very much under attack from both our national government as our European, I would almost say, government as well. Our farmers have been very courageously protesting the rules and regulations that they've been subjected to. And I have been, I've sort of in an unofficial manner become a spokesperson for them on the, I would say, like, international playing field. Because I was basically the only Dutch journalist who covered the situation over at home for an American audience. And thankfully, the American people were very attentive to what was happening and were quite shocked and were very outspoken about how they thought what was going on in the Netherlands was insane. And it sort of like grew organically in that sense. I care deeply about our farming sector, and I'm very happy to give them a voice in the international media landscape. So that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah, you've done a great job building that platform. I know you've built quite the following in America, and you've done a great job just spreading the message. I know we appreciate it. And I know that is how we pretty much got connected with you. I think RCAF was the only American ag organization standing with y'all when you first started protesting. And so that led us to your platform, and then you spoke at convention, and it's just been a great partnership we've built. And so here we are again today. Those first Dutch farmer protests were, I think, in July of like 2022 is when we, you know, first started partnering with you, I guess we can say. But here we are again today. There's 20 countries, including the Netherlands, Germany, Poland. I mean, I could go on and on. I think I saw India also was protesting. But these farmers are standing up, tens of thousands of tractors being driven to their capitals. And what has lit the flame with this? You know, why are they protesting? How did we get from, you know, the Dutch farmer protests to all of these countries across Europe standing up today?
Sure. Well, so in the Netherlands, things started in 2019 when I gave my keynote speech at RCAF in August. I think I told the same story that we had a an activist group who basically sued the Dutch government over climate rules and regulations, European climate rules and regulations, actually, saying, well, the Dutch government isn't doing enough to fight what they called the nitrogen crisis. So this climate, you know, activist organization claimed that we had a nitrogen issue. And the nitrogen issue laid in, as they claimed, the fact that so basically cows fart and burp, right? And so they emit nitrogen, and that nitrogen then gets deposited back onto the soil, and that, they said, changes the outlook of our natural landscapes, which is very funny because we barely have like nature, quote unquote, in the Netherlands. Like, anybody who would come to our country would see that, you know, we're a great country, but we're not exactly known for our vast landscapes or our beautiful countryside, in the sense that it's not that our countryside isn't beautiful, but it is very much taken up by agricultural you know, land, and also there's a lot of urban buildings. So we're a very, very tiny country. We don't really have a lot of, like, we don't have mountain ranges, you know, like, we don't have tons of really interesting meadows. But so this climate organization was saying, no, we have an issue, and the Dutch government was sued by them, and this judge was like, yeah, you do. The Dutch government has an obligation to abide by these climate rules and regulations. And so they ruled in favor of the activists. And then suddenly, officially, we were in a nitrogen crisis. And on the basis of that, the Dutch government has been making new laws, constantly regulating the agricultural sector to an extent where basically the Dutch farmers were like, we can't do this anymore. Like, we can't keep up. And then in 2022, if I'm not mistaken, that's when things started to get really, really heated, because the Dutch government then wanted to enforce actually like expropriating farmers. So they said, well, to bring these nitrogen emissions down, we need to cut at least 30% of all cattle in the Netherlands. And that would, if you do that, you know, like, I don't have to explain that to farmers, but it's not like, oh, you can just get rid of 30% of your cattle and then business as usual continues, you know, like, that would mean for the Dutch farmers, at least, that almost 50% of them would go out of business. So we're talking about halving our agricultural sector there. And so that caused, obviously, immense anger and distress with the Dutch farmers. And they've been going out to protest ever since. And that's, I think that's why it became such an internationally known, you know, phenomenon in 2022, because that's when things really, really hit the fan. Let's put it that way. And I spoke out about it then for the first time, like, to an international audience. And I said to everyone who would listen, look, guys, you know, you might think that this is just a Dutch issue for now, because we are the ones dealing with this first. But this is all based on an ideology. This is all based on an agenda that is international. And under the pretext of saving the planet, they are going to try and do the same thing to your farmers elsewhere. And exactly that, sadly, has happened. So, you know, these European rules and regulations, although in Germany, you know, they're talking about carbon rather than nitrogen, but it's the same idea. You know, they are being used, these rules and regulations, to crack down on the agricultural sectors of all of these respective European countries, and even outside of the European Union as well, through the United Nations agenda, which is ultimately sort of at the top of the hierarchy. You know, it's all, but people need to understand that this is all behind, like, what is behind this is this agenda 2030, the Green Deal, the climate agenda. It's all the same thing, net zero, you know, and that ideology is being used to target the farmers first. And, well, we've seen now that that has caused uproar also in other European countries, and farmers have gone out on the street with their tractors as well. So it's been, you know, the attack is global, but the resistance also seems to be in that sense global. So that's I think what we've been witnessing over the past few years.
Shad, do you want to go into the fifth question?
I do.
I know you're chomping at the bit.
So, Ava, it is absolutely an anti-animal ideology that comes from the very top of the world, of the global elite, down and through the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, and they are using the European Union and the African Union, the United States, as foot soldiers into these global corporations to push this ideology, which is anti-animal, but really the whole crux of it is it's anti-property rights. Right. They don't want us to own any land, because we know that in America, the very basis of freedom and liberty is private property. So how does your government, how is it, I shouldn't say controlled, but how does it work? Because we supposedly are supposed to be from the bottom up. The people control the government. But now we're seeing with this ideology that is spreading across the world so quickly, it's top-down control. How are you guys supposed to be governed?
Well, I mean, we're supposedly a liberal democracy, right, in the Netherlands. So it's supposed to be that the people rule. I think that that's at this point nothing but an illusion and a farce. We can see that merely by the fact that Brussels now makes the majority of our laws, and we don't directly decide on those laws, right? The European Union is a very anti-democratic organization. The European Commission, which is not directly democratically elected, is the legislative body of the European Union. And if those Eurocrats decide for us what our legal landscape should look like, you know, can you even really speak still of a functioning democracy? I personally do not think so. And this idea, what you're talking about, of the state being a body that should be there to help us, or should be there, I guess, to serve us, right? We call them public servants for a reason, and we are private citizens. That idea has been flipped upside down. It's completely lost, I would say, in the minds of especially Europeans. You know, we have for some reason forgotten that we pay more than in the Netherlands, like the top layer, more than 50%, right, of our income to the state with taxes. That's insane, you know, and we're spending, or the government is spending, that money that is ours on all of these things that are not in our best interest at all, and things that we don't even have a say in. I mean, you know, this is obviously a little bit of topic, but we're talking mass immigration, for example. You know, we're talking this climate agenda. We're talking the European Union. It's the idea that the state is there to serve us rather than the other way around is something that people have seemed to forgotten. And I don't know how, why, but I'm trying to remind them that this is not how it should be.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point, because when you bring up the immigration issue and you bring up all of these other issues that actually bypass our government, we're a government of, by, and for the people. We are a constitutionally republic, which is different than a democracy. But what we're seeing is that control mechanism move over into away from the people giving the government the right to create laws, and we're coming into what they call public-private partnerships, which bypasses our Congress, and then that allows these bureaucracies to go out, unelected bureaucracies to go out and create policy and rules that we're supposed to follow, and that is nothing related to our government. But going back to like immigration, all of these issues are happening for the first time in world history, all over at the same exact issues happening to every country. So this agenda is actually interwoven into all of these industries, organizations, policies, all of it. And it's kind of a centralized attack on everything, because it is so composed. It seems to be so well thought out. And so we're all fighting the same things, whether you live in a constitutional republic or a liberal democracy. I think that what is different about this agenda is that it is all happening to us at the same time.
Right. Well, you were saying what I think is, and very, very important. You said, well, this is an anti-animal agenda, but it's not just anti-animal, it's anti-human, right? Yes. So this globalist agenda And that's, of course, why it's all happening in tandem at the same time to all of us, you know, maybe to different extents. And they try to confuse you with, oh, in the Netherlands, it's nitrogen. In Germany, it's carbon. Then it's phosphate. So they try to make us feel like there are particular issues that our national governments are dealing with, when in fact, the agenda behind it is exactly the same. You know, so they're just trying to throw you off. And the thing is immigration and also the attack on farming, I see that those things are all connected, because ultimately what they, I think, are aiming for is to create people who are uprooted, right? So if you want to abolish national identities, if you want to get rid of things that bind us, you know, together, culture, religion, you know, Christianity, all these landmarks that used to give us guidance and that and were the things that made our civilization great. If you want to get rid of those and you want to create this sort of, you know, super state, which the European Union definitely is aiming to create, you know, they're trying to create a European super state, and the European Union is just one thing, but ultimately the goal, I think, is global governance. Well, then you need to get rid of the differences. You know, you need to get rid of what makes a Dutch person a Dutch person and an American an American. And you need to make sure that they forget about their history. You need to make sure that they even maybe potentially hate their own history, which is something that we are very much seeing in our schools and in our education system and in the media. And so when people don't know who they are, you know, like it's a cliche maybe, but I think it's true. It's like, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. And then you are the perfect consumer who will of course eat synthetic meat created by Bill Gates. Why not? You know, you're told that it's good for the planet, and you're told that you're a virtuous person if you do so. And if you do that, you pay his bills, right? And he can buy up the farmland in the United States. And it all sort of comes together. But to the outside world, if you are, you're not aware of this, if you're not informed, and you just consume the mainstream media, you would have no idea, you know? And that's I think, one of the nefarious elements to this agenda, is the confusion that they're constantly trying to create, where they play into even people's humility in a way, right? I've seen that so often in the Netherlands when it came to the nitrogen crisis, which I've always said it doesn't exist. You know, it does not exist. It's just a pretext. But then I would speak to ordinary citizens who would say, yeah, well, I don't know that, you know, I'm not an expert. I didn't study, anything related to that. So I don't know if I would be a right judge to say if there is or is not a nitrogen crisis. So I'm trusting that the government knows, I'm trusting that the experts know. So out of this sense of humility, which usually is a good thing, people then accept things that are, to me, and at least my conspiratorial mind, very clearly, nefarious. And that's something that is difficult, I think, to challenge, considering the uniformity of our media landscape and, our government policies.
Well, and we're seeing here in the United States an attack on private property, of course. Yesterday in South Dakota, Republicans and Democrats came together and voted to take the local sovereignty away from the people, to seize their land in the name of climate change. The same bill is going to be introduced in Colorado. And all of this is in the name of climate change. And we know that the rally cry of tyrants is crisis. There's a crisis. Yes. And the crisis now is climate change. And so they had to make something that made people feel good. And that result is sustainability, which we know that sustainable development is nothing more than production and consumption control to get a hold of all of this control. You said something very interesting, and I want to kind of go back on that, is that this is not only anti-animal, but it's anti-human. And we know that under the UN and the Sustainable Development Goals, they want a population reduction of so much by the year 2050. And Klaus Schwab even admitted that we were on the right track to population reduction. So that does make it a eugenics movement. How does that play into the regular people of the European Union, just a farmer and rancher? I guess maybe you don't have farmers and ranchers over there. You have more farmers, where we have vast land of ranchers. But are they playing? Is there any of them playing into it? Because We have a sector here in the United States. Let's take the carbon issue right now. They say, well, we know that one sector of agriculture is saying, we know that the carbon deal is all fake. The crisis is fake, but it's going to open new markets. So they're really into the lie that carbon is an issue and that cattle are killing the planet, and they're perpetuating it in the name of the dollar. Do you see any of that happening over there?
Less that, but what we do see is that there is a great divide between even like in the Dutch farming, community. And I could really say it's a community because we're a small country, right? So a lot of farmers really know each other. It's not like, you know, you would have to drive for hours and hours to find your neighbor. Your neighbor is right around the corner. So the thing is that I think we have farmers who don't want to believe that the government actually wants them gone, actually wants them. And I would even say dead, because the suicide rates amongst Dutch farmers are very high. And I would say that that's something that our politicians absolutely, they clearly don't care, but I think it's something that they're happy about, because then the problem solves itself, right? You don't have to expropriate a farmer who's dead. And that's harsh, but I think that that's the reality, that those are the people that rule us right now. So that should be mentioned. What we see is people who are aware that there's a nefarious agenda and that no level of compromise will ever get them anywhere, because, they might have tried, a few years ago, but they have found over and over again that no level of compromise ever did anything. It just resulted always in them having to give up more. And ultimately, we are now at the point where we're talking about expropriation, right? So talking about property rights is, if your government is allowed to expropriate you whenever they say there is a crisis, and I think you're very correct, crisis is the key word that tyrants use, then you don't have property rights. I'm sorry, there's no such thing as property rights if they can just take it away from you the moment that they deem there is an issue. So we have those farmers, and then we have the farmers who still, for some reason, have not quite woken up to that fact. That might be cognitive dissonance. They might be just really kind-hearted people who almost cannot fathom, that evil people can be in power and are currently in power. Or they're people who just don't want to see it. I think that group is shrinking, though, because the reality is just hitting everybody in the face a little too hard. So
I mean, it's in the fruit of what's happening, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is I'm sure we'll come to that also, but these protests have been going on. If the governments and if the European Union really listens, something substantial would have changed. Instead, nothing substantial ever happens. What they sometimes do, also again to confuse the public, is they'll take two steps forwards and then one step back. And then, the EU is saying, and then people who are not quite in the subject matter will go on to X and write, oh, the EU has completely listened to the farmers' protests. They've caved under the pressure and they have now made concessions. It's like, No, they're not. They're not making any concessions, because within 2 weeks after that happened, we now had another law passed that again is going to really, really target the agricultural sector in Europe. So it's all, there is no such thing as the EU giving in a little bit or saying, oh yeah, we'll compromise, or it's not happening. This is a train that is going forward very, very steadily and much faster than people know.
Let me ask you a question, and let's dispel a myth here. In the United States, a lot of the non-conservative people that are watching the protests in the European Union and the Netherlands and all of that are saying, oh, those farmers are just mad because they're ending their subsidies, their farm subsidies. Let's dispel that right now, because that is the name I get every day. They're just angry because they're ending their subsidies.
Biggest lie. So first and foremost, I mean, I suppose that they're then talking about the German farmers, because that is the mainstream narrative there, that the farmers were angry because the German government wanted to cut tax breaks on agricultural diesel. That was sort of the thing that they put out in the media. It's like, oh, that's why the farmers are upset. They're getting less subsidies. It's nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. First and foremost, the pressure of the rules and regulations have been going on for much, much longer than just these, you know, subsidies or these tax breaks, right? This was just the straw that broke the camel's back. So it's not about that in and of itself alone. You know, I've always said this, and I've said it, I think, even at RCAP, this is a war of attrition. Like, these farmers are constantly asked to change their business, to use different pesticides. Then it's this rule, that rule. Then they need to keep record of everything. They're spending hours and hours a day on bureaucracy to tell the government exactly what they're doing, what they're not doing, which the government has no business in at all. Like, they're writing down all of these reports for some government official who doesn't even know what farming is, you know, has never set foot on a farm. And that, but that's their reality. It's insane. It's ridiculous. So these people are put with their backs against the wall. And of course the mainstream media is going to say, like, oh no, this is just about subsidies. This is just about the agricultural tax breaks. No, no, it's not. And everybody who's has set foot on a farm once or has spoken to a farmer knows that that is not all that it's about. It's just the one thing that then, again, like I said, breaks the camel's back, right? So there is a breaking point for everybody, and the farmers are hitting it, and that's why they've gone out. You know, it's not just about that.
It's death, but we call it a death by a thousand cuts, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Jaden, I don't mean to take the floor. You go ahead. I'm sorry.
Something I want to bring up that, you know, this list of, it seems to be a growing list of countries that are protesting. And something interesting that I don't know if people have fully grasped, the fact that several of these countries are not that far removed from communist control. And so kind of explain to that what this means, that these countries' farmers, who some of them saw and lived communism, that they are standing up in connection just to all of this globalist, you know, agenda.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, the Polish farmers, for example, have gone out to protest as well, and they definitely know what communism is. I mean, in Western Europe, that's something that is very far removed from our memory, I would say. You know, it's I don't even think that most people in the Netherlands understand that the concept of expropriation is a communist ideal. Yes. You know, like, I don't think that they really fully grasp that. But of course, obviously, it is. You know, if the attack on property rights is an absolute central element to communism, and especially the idea of doing that for the greater good, in this case, the climate, you know, it's just communism rebranded, right? It's like, oh, I, as the government, am going to tell you what now the greater good is. The greater good is saving the planet. Well, why don't you give that up to me? Give up your private property, give up your land, and we'll fix this for you. You know, like, it's, and the, just like communism back in the old days, you know, it never has been about equality. I don't think that people fully grasp that, but it's never been about equality. The only result is that everybody's equally miserable and equally poor. You know, yes. And that is what is going to happen with this. And the top layer is going to be even richer for it. So, you know, that's what communism was then. That's what communism is now. And it's just rebranded. But the attack on farming is also a tragedy that, well, I mean, I don't have to tell you, but Stalin and Lenin knew all too well. You know, it was the first thing that they did. Because if you control the food production, you control everything. You control everyone. That was, of course, the title to my keynote speech, control the food, control the people. And that's something that these neo-communists that we're dealing right now know all too well. They haven't forgotten about that. But it's good to see that, indeed, also countries in Eastern Europe that still do have a recollection of the horrors of communism are now seeing the similarities with the European regulations that they're being subjected to and are going out to protest as well. So I think that, I mean, I'm assuming that also in a country like Poland that has now been taken over, sadly, by a globalist government, that sentiment will continue to grow under, like, with the farmers there as well. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question enough, Jaden, but I think that, yeah, this is definitely, of course, it's like I said, it's communism rebranded. If you, yes, if you have to give up your property rights in the name of a crisis, and or you're being taxed into oblivion to pay for climate rules and regulations or net zero agendas, all of these things that are complete nonsense, then of course that's it ultimately amounts to the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Shad kind of touched on the we have a lot of issues going on in America. We may not be quite where Europe is regarding regulations and that kind of stuff, but we have a lot of policies and stuff that our ag organizations are pushing hard. Property rights issues, mandatory animal ID, which we've seen how that went in Ireland. You know, centralization of our food production. There's all these issues. So what is the biggest mistake that American agriculture can make right now? How do we stop this from advancing in America and advancing throughout Europe further?
My main message would be, do not be naive. Don't think that compromise is going to get you anywhere. And that sounds bitter, I know. And to good-hearted people, that might sound strange and like bad advice, because usually, if you're dealing with people in good faith, compromise does bring you somewhere. But what people need to know, and what the American farmers and ranchers need to know, is that we are not dealing with people who act in good faith. And then compromising is just stalling the process of you being expropriated. Ultimately, that's what happened to the Dutch farmers. Don't think that the Dutch, it's literally almost in our blood, and we have so many Dutch proverbs that are about compromise, and even our political landscape, our culture, political culture is best described in this one word that I cannot translate, but it's called polderkultuur. And it basically embodies this idea of giving and taking, compromise, compromise, compromise. We don't have a two-party system like in the United States. We have a lot of parties. So even in our government formation process, everybody needs to make compromises in order to even form a coalition so that you have a majority in parliament and you can actually put laws through. So that is very much embedded into our political and cultural DNA. But it has gotten the farmers absolutely nowhere over the past few years. Every single compromise, every single time they've been open to technological developments, that were mandated by the government, for example, another thing would come, and another thing would come, and another thing. And ultimately, it's always just less for the farmer, more for the government, more for the supermarkets, in your case, probably more for the meat packers, more for everybody else in the production line. But the farmers ultimately are always drawing the shortest end of the stick. And that's, ultimately what led them to go and protest in such an un-Dutch fashion, because that's not how things started out. It started out with, oh yeah, okay, we'll compromise, we'll compromise. But then 2 years later, it was like, hey, we might expropriate you.
Well, I think you make a good point on that compromise issue, because all compromise is incrementalism. They incrementally take those rights away through what you're talking about, which is compromise. And I will tell you that the founding fathers of this country, who were so well thought out, were incredible people, did not compromise. But we have sat the last 120 years here compromising our values, our integrity, and our constitution, which is a living document, to make both parties happy. And now, all of a sudden, through incrementalism, we actually have a one-party system here, where the Republicans and the Democrats are wings on the same bird. One party, the Democrats, want to take us to any ism except Americanism through force, socialism, communism, Marxism, whatever, through force, where the Republicans actually want to make us serfs through corporate control. Either way, we lose at the end. The man who produces the food is under total ownership, and he loses out.
It's certain things you just can't compromise on without ruining the entire concept of what it is that you are supposedly compromising on, right? It's like, you can't compromise on the idea of sovereignty, for example. You're either sovereign or you're not. It's not like, oh, I can give up a little bit of sovereignty to the United to the European Union. It's like, no, once you do that, you're not sovereign anymore. Like, you're either pregnant or you're not. You're not a little bit pregnant, like, that's the same thing with this. So yeah, property rights, you either have them or you don't. If the government can take them away under the guise of a crisis that they get to decide, when we have a crisis or not, then you don't have property rights. So I would say, yeah, no, stay strong in that, and don't let yourself be manipulated, and don't be afraid to be perceived as Well, I mean, like, you know, that's another thing that I will say is that the Dutch farmers were very afraid that they would lose the support of the population, the Dutch population, the Dutch people, if they were too harsh in their protests. Even the smallest protests in the Netherlands, you know, were written about by the mainstream media as dangerous extremists, you know, who weren't open to compromise, yada yada. Yeah. So it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, because these people hate you and they're not going to love you. That's right. So no matter how much you compromise with them, it just, you know, they might, if they smell your fear, they smell blood, they're going to kill you. And no amount of compromise is going to deter them. So.
And without the fight, they're going to kill you anyway. I mean, we just as well go down fighting for what's right, because man, you said it earlier, you know, Mao, Stalin, Hitler, Cuba, if you got caught with seeds in some of those countries, they killed you on the spot. If they found a garden, they killed you on the spot. It was that serious. And people think, Shad, you are so crazy. But this is truth. I mean, it's absolute truth. And history repeats itself. And so I think we're going down a very dangerous road. And the only reason I think that you are ahead of us is because of our constitution and our ability to own a gun. I think that is what has slowed it down here in the United States.
100%. And of course, you know, I see that as part of the reason why they're coming after the farmers is that we in the Netherlands do not have a First Amendment, and we sure as hell don't have a Second Amendment. So we're not armed, right? And if you were to argue for a Second Amendment, the Dutch population and European population in general is already so brainwashed that they don't understand why you would want a gun. They don't understand why you would want a Second Amendment. The only thing that comes to mind in the minds of the most, you know, the ordinary person here is like, oh, but guns are dangerous. Oh, we'll have school shootings. They don't even understand that the founding fathers enshrined that into your constitution, because they understand that a government can turn tyrannical and that you would need... Yeah, and that you would need the means to defend yourself against a tyrannical government. Well, guess what? Our government has surely turned tyrannical, and we don't have guns to defend ourselves. And we're talking about expropriation right now of farmers. And the farmers, that's what I think is interesting. You know, those tractors, that's, I mean, you can really make a strong impression on your establishment when you take all of those tractors out onto the road, which they've done, and you block off a highway or you block an airport. You know, it's basically like a tank in that sense. Like, good luck trying to get rid of thousands of farmers blocking a highway, right? So they know, our establishment knows, that these men and women, these farmers, are in the front line in this war against globalism. They know that, and they know that they are the most powerful group that can still really put up a fight against them, and that's why they want to get rid of them. You know, it's all, of course, there are other reasons too. Of course, it's wanting the land, you know, there's a land grab, but that element of the farmers being independent and also being able to really put up a fight, not, you know, not a violent fight, but even just by blocking the highways, for example, really being able to paralyze a country with that. And we've seen that in the Netherlands, we've seen that in Germany, we've seen that in France. They're scared of that, and they should be, you know, because these people are the only group in our society that can really genuinely still defend us against them, you know, because the general population cannot, because we don't have a Second Amendment.
Yeah, that's right.
You're preaching to the choir. Shad and I are like, yes. I do think, you know, we've kind of touched on it a few times, the role that the media has played in all of this. And, you know, the farmer protests specifically have not hardly been covered by the mainstream media, it seems. And, you know, in the U.S., we're now seeing the media involved in these pushing bugs and pushing sustainability. Even our ag media platforms are pushing these things now. And so I think it's important to talk about, how do we combat the media? You know, how do you keep people vigilant despite the media? And how do you, you know, the younger generations of you and I, Ava, most of the people our age are totally brainwashed. And so how do we, you know, fight this media giant that is just playing into all of it, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm trying, you know, and I'm trying through a platform like X, formerly Twitter, right? And I think I think the mainstream media, still they hold a lot of power, sure, and it's a big problem, but they hold a lot of power with an older electorate that will become smaller and smaller. So it's a matter of time till something shifts there. With the younger generations, I think that our generation, Jaden, I don't know how old you are, but I'm like on the border between Gen Z and millennials, right? I'm 27. Our generation, the millennials, are a difficult group. Like they're a really difficult group to convince. But then I feel like the Gen Zers are starting to become more and more aware of the lies of the mainstream media. They don't watch the news, you know, they don't watch TV and things like that. They're more on social media anyway. And the growth of a platform like X, which is obviously a free speech platform and is not where somebody like me is not censored, for example, that is going to be extraordinarily important. So I am going to post all of my content, which I've already been doing, but I'm going to continue posting it on there primarily because I know it won't be shut down, right? It's not going to get taken down from a platform like it would be on YouTube, for example. So pushing that type of citizen journalism, I guess, is very, very important. I think also, I hope that you guys are talking about protests in America. And if I can be of any help with that, I will be. And so what I've just been doing is trying to connect people in Europe and have everybody, you know, film their protests, take out your phone, put it on X, and people love it. Like people want to see this because they know that it's being actively suppressed by the mainstream media. So anytime that I post something on X about the farmers' protest, it gets really, really great numbers. You know, people share it a lot because they know that this is being suppressed, but they want to see it. And just that, you know, is, I think, a really, really good sign. So it's not, there's no easy fix to this. Obviously, you know, the mainstream is going to try and ignore it for as long as they can. The only thing that you can do is just make sure it's so big that they can't, you know, and that means don't be intimidated. So do not care what they write about you, but try and make sure that you become so big that they have to write about you. And of course, they're going to call you far-right extremist, yada, yada. But we know that, you know, like, who cares at this point? You know, like that's
you know, you talk about those, the younger generations. And one of the problems we're seeing, and this is how a lot of this has come to be, is once you get three generations away from the family farm, what actually produces your food, you have a loss at how that food comes to your table. You don't understand. Yeah. And so when they've never gone without, you know, in the 1920s, we experienced the Great Depression in the United States. And I can remember my grandfather telling me, he said, all we had to eat or drink was curdled milk. We went without. And so that generation understood, well, once you get three generations out, they don't understand where your food comes from. And so they're easily swayed one way or another. And I think that's one of the results that we're seeing. I had the great opportunity to be on Glenn Beck here, I don't know, a month ago. Mm. And we were talking about this globalist issue and those people setting policies. And I told him, I said, Glenn, because he was asking me all these questions. And I said, Glenn, these are people setting policies of production and consumption across the world that couldn't even change a flat tire if they tried. They can't do the simplest of tasks in daily life, but they're telling us how we need to produce and how we need to consume. And I think that's one message we need to get on top of. And it seems to be resonating, at least my message of liberty and freedom connected to production and consumption is resonating across the United States right now. We're getting a lot of support. So I think there's a tide turning there, I hope. And of course, with your help, I mean, you've been a great help. And, you know, we have a RCAF member that is the Ava of the United States and Lonesome Lands, and it's pretty cool. But I do see a tide turning. I just hope it's not too late, because all of this really comes down to liberty and freedom.
Amen. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It does. I don't think it is too late. I think there's a lot of damage that has been done, and you are right. People have forgotten where their food comes from, but people can be reminded of that real quick.
Yeah. My dad always said, and I say people get tired of me saying this, but my dad always said, Shad, in fact, he was on his deathbed when he said this to me. He said, Shad, we will never change America until everyone has to sit in the dark, cold, and hungry. Then we can change America.
Well, I'm afraid that that is quite literally where we're heading. With the current establishment in power, that is where we're heading. And that's what I've been trying to make people aware of, because, you know, this is something that they either, you know, I've been saying this for a long time. I don't see incompetence in these people, not just incompetence, maybe with some on lower levels, but, you know, the people at the top level know exactly what they're doing. And they also know that through poverty and starvation, you know, they can gain complete control over people. But what they always underestimate is the fighting power that people have. There is no tyrant in history that has not at a certain point been toppled. There just basically isn't. So this, it's a matter of time, because, you know, I truly as a Christian believe that good will always prevail, and has already with the resurrection of our Lord. Yeah. So that it can be dark for a long time. But ultimately the good will prevail, and it will prevail in this case as well. And what I think
I was just going to say, I know you're a Christian, and that makes my heart so warm, but, you just hit the nail on the head. They know what they're doing. We have to remember that even though we know what the Bible says and how God says that this is going to end, our enemies, the dark enemies of this world, the dark forces, also know scripture, and they know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we have to just keep on preaching the gospel, but also in very practical terms with the protests, reminding people of where their food comes from. I think one of the most impactful ways that the Dutch farmers, for example, have protested, and this is something that I would recommend any ranger, any farmer who wants to go out and protest, and I hope that the Dutch will do it again too, was not just blocking the highway, but especially blocking distribution centers of supermarkets. Because what that caused was immediately you could see food shortages with your own eyes in the supermarket. And so the people in Amsterdam, you know, who spend $8 on their cappuccino every day but have no idea, you know, where their food comes from anymore, they went into the supermarket and suddenly there was the shelves were empty. And I think that that was a rude awakening for even some of the most detached from reality lefties, you know, that we have in our country, where it was like, oh, that can happen. And they might think it's annoying. You know, they might not put two and two together yet. And they might at first be like, oh, those farmers. But the next time it happens, they might be like, why are these people doing that? Do they not have a point? You know, and with the German farmer protests that I've been covering, I was very, very pleasantly surprised at the support that I saw from the German population there. Because, well, if there is a one country, you know, where you don't want to be labeled a far-right extremist, it's Germany, for obvious historical reasons. But when the German farmers blocked some of these highways there, and I went back and talked to some of the people who were stuck in their car for hours, it's like, what do you think of this? Do you support the farmers? They were all like, well, yeah, of course, I don't love being stuck in traffic, but I completely understand why they're doing this, and they have my complete support. And that was really 9 out of 10 people that I spoke to on that highway, and they were stuck for 4 to 5 hours, you know, on their way to work, sitting there in their car. But 9 out of 10 people were like, no, I get it. I support it. And that to me was like, okay, the genie is out of the bottle here. You know, no matter what the mainstream media says, maybe, you know, not everybody is going to take to the streets themselves. Maybe not everybody is going to publicly write a message of support to the farmers, but really, people in the agricultural sector need to know that there's way more support for them than they think. Way more.
That's awesome.
That's good to hear. Yeah, that was one of my questions I had for you, was what the public sympathies were. And I think it's inspiring that, you know, no farmers, no food, all the posters that you're seeing, you know, you don't know the language, but you already know what it says pretty much just by seeing the people and seeing just the whole movement itself. And I think, you know, we specifically talk about beef all the time and cattle all the time, but this is agriculture across the board. And I think the European farmers have done a really good job of demonstrating that, that, you know, you have some of the largest agriculture exporters in the world protesting. And so it's not just cattle. It's not just, you know, it's across the board, top down, all the way. I don't know where I was going with that, but.
No, that's true. But definitely the focus on cattle, I do think that there's a specific focus on cattle farmers and trying to get rid of them, because they know that animal products, like good meat, is ultimately what makes us strong. Exactly. Yes. And so if you know that it's an anti-animal but also an anti-human agenda, then making sure that humans, people, can't eat food that makes them strong and resilient is of course the best way, you know, to make them weak and easy to control. So I do definitely think that there is therefore a true focus on cattle farms and getting rid of them. That's at least what is happening in the Netherlands, of course. So yeah, no surprise there to me.
Here too, Ava, you're exactly right. I mean, it is a attack. Number one, it takes land to run cattle, and they don't want us to own land. And number two, they know that cattle actually heal the planet. They are beyond carbon neutral. They actually, we use them to heal the planet. And so it is so, all of this, and I guess you'll have to cut this out, Jaden, but all of it is so anti-God. It's anti-God.
Don't cut it out. Of course.
It's an anti-God movement because, and people think, I mean, we have a large sector of agriculture in the United States who love the thought of sustainability. They're pushing it. And I'm like, I've been fighting it for 14 years. I'm like, you guys, this is wrong. This is anti-America, anti-capitalism, anti-family, anti-God, anti-freedom. And that's what it is. It's from the devil. It's from Satan. And I think they're finally starting to wake up. But this huge sector that is beholden to our ag organizations, and those ag organizations are beholden to our federal government, and our federal government is beholden to the UN and the World Economic Forum and the global elite. See, this is how it works. And it is so dangerous on any society because it is anti-human.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Don't cut this out. I'll be angry if you cut this out. This was great.
I won't. Perfect. I'm leaving that in.
And I completely agree with you. 100%. This is what is behind it ultimately. And people need to be aware of that. Need to be made aware of that. This is not just, we're not just talking policy here. This is a spiritual battle. Of course. And you might think like, well, what do cows have to do with that? Well, everything, because God created them too. And there's a reason for it. So, you know,
and people don't understand that a beef animal, especially in settling America and settling the West, the cow was the only animal that provided 100% sustenance to human life. All they had to have was the meat. And then the offal provided everything else. And that was the only animal that could do that. And God designed that. God designed that to be that way. And it's such a powerful, powerful thing that it is the related attack on the beef industry comes from that darkness. It truly is.
I have nothing to add. Absolutely. Yes, sir. 100%. Amen.
I'm bone chilled. I mean, these conversations chill me to the bone because I just am so passionate about it. I'm sorry.
No, it's wonderful. It's great to see, because ultimately you are a warrior for the Lord if you speak like this. So and I mean for humanity with that. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think we could go on all day. I know we're running out of time here. So Shad, close us out. I know this is your favorite part. So
yes. So Ava, I just want to give you my total appreciation and thanks for coming on to our podcast. I would like to ask you one thing. What is your favorite cut of beef and how do you like it cooked?
Okay. Yeah. I was, so I know everybody is always like, oh, ribeye. And I'm a filet mignon, like tenderloin girl. That's my favorite.
that's awesome. Thank you. Well, I just want to remind everybody that beef and liberty are interwoven. And where there is beef, there is freedom.
Thank you, Ava, for sitting down with us today and for being an engaged voice in these issues. We have links to much of what we talked about on today's show in the show notes. Be sure to go find Ava's platform and be sure to watch for the content she puts out. It can't be said enough that all these issues are about control, and it's up to us to stand up for our industry, our food supply, and our freedoms. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Let us know what you think and how we're doing. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to give us a follow at RCAF USA on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. RCAF USA is set apart from all other national cattle associations because we rely solely on membership dues and donations to carry out our mission to ensure the continued profitability and independence of United States cattle and sheep producers. We exist only because of the support from our members, and we ask you to become a member today. Call 406-252-2516 or go to r-cafusa.com.